Hello everybody, Daniel Barnett here from Outer Temple Chambers, and welcome to episode 70 of Employment Law Matters. This episode is on the brand new ICO, Information Commissioner's Office, Right of Access Detailed Guidance. Last week, I'm recording this on the 29th of October, last week the ICO published the Right of Access Detailed Guidance. It doesn't alter existing law, but rather it provides clarification for employers on how to deal with subject access requests. And following consultation, there are three main areas that the guidance addresses. First of all, what amounts to a manifestly excessive subject access request. Second of all, what's a reasonable fee for complying with a manifestly excessive or unfounded subject access request? And thirdly, stopping the clock when clarification of the subject access request is required. You'll learn about all of these in this episode of Employment Law Matters.
Welcome to Employment Law Matters with Barrister Daniel Barnett.
The first of the three issues that the guidance addresses is what amounts to a manifestly excessive subject access request. You probably know you can refuse, if you're an employer or indeed anyone, to comply with a subject access request if it is manifestly unfounded or manifestly excessive. For the moment, we're only concerned with manifestly excessive, although the guidance does deal with both. The guidance confirms that it's a balancing act, and the employer has to decide whether the subject access request is, quote, clearly or obviously unreasonable, end quote. And this involves assessing whether the response required is, again I quote, proportionate when balanced with the burden or costs involved, end quote. Employers should consider all the circumstances, including the nature of the information, the context of the request, whether or not complying with the subject access request could cause substantive damage to the employee, and your available resources. And when deciding if a request is manifestly excessive, the Information Commissioner's Office suggests you do the following four things. Number one, consider each request individually. If there's more than one, a blanket policy won't work here. Number two, remember that if an employee has previously submitted an unfounded or excessive request, that doesn't mean the same is true of this one. Consider it fairly. Number three, decide if the subject access request is clearly or obviously unreasonable. And number four, make sure you've got robust justification for why you think it's manifestly excessive, which you can clearly demonstrate to the individual and perhaps more importantly, to the Information Commissioner's Office.
Join Daniel Barnett for the LBC Legal Hour, Saturday nights at 9 p.m.
The second issue dealt with in the new guidance, and you'll find the link to the guidance in the show notes, is what is a reasonable fee for complying with a manifestly excessive or unfounded subject access request? Because as it stands, there's no limit on what you can charge other than the ever elusive reasonableness requirement. So a reasonable fee can include the cost of staff time, photocopying, printing, postage, envelopes, USB sticks, etc. Employers are allowed to take into account the administrative cost related to assessing the information, locating it, copying it, and communicating with the employee. The cost of staff time is usually going to be assessed on a reasonable, there's that word again, a reasonable hourly rate. It's not a requirement, but it's good practice to establish an unbiased set of criteria for charging fees for subject access requests. And the Information Commissioner's Office recommends this includes the circumstances where you charge a fee, your standard charges, and an explanation of how those charges are calculated. Disclosing those criteria to an individual to whom you're charging a fee helps to explain why you're doing it, and it also shows you've taken a fair and consistent approach. But do remember, in most cases, you cannot charge a fee for compliance with a subject access request. It's only if the request is manifestly excessive or unfounded.
Employment Law Matters, the number one business podcast for HR professionals and employment lawyers.
Issue number three dealt with by the guidance is about stopping the clock when clarification of the subject access request is needed. We know an employer can potentially stop the clock on the 1 month time limit for compliance with an SAR if clarification is genuinely required and if the organisation processes a large volume of information about the employee. Now, it has to be clarification on the information requested, not clarification on anything else, such as the form of the response. So you can't get an extension of time by saying, well, you asked for it by email, but we only have a hard copy. Do you mind if we post it? You should ask for clarification as soon as possible. Until you do, the clock is still running. If you can help the employee in clarifying their request, do. In your letter or email asking for clarification, you can make suggestions such as, do you want all the information relating to X incident? Do you want all the information processed between X date and Y date, etc., etc.? You should also think about whether you're able to supply some of the information straight away, such as the purposes of processing, categories of personal data you hold, etc. That might be covered in your privacy notice, in which case a link to that will suffice. Now, most people are likely to be unaware of the stop the clock provision and will still be expecting a reply within a month. So it's important to tell the employee that the clock stops when you ask for clarification and doesn't restart till they reply and provide the clarification. If they're quick to reply, this may only give you a 1 or 2 day extension. If you get a reply the same day, the clock doesn't stop at all and you don't get an extension of time at all. It works in days, not hours. Let's give an example. And this is an example from the ICO's guidance. If you receive a request on the 14th of May, the time limit starts on that day. So you have a month to reply, which means you should respond by or on the 14th of June. But if you ask for clarification on the 15th of May, that's the day after getting the request, the clock stops from the 15th of May till the date the requester responds. So if the requester, the person making the subject access request, gives you clarification on the 18th of May, the clock resumes on that date. That means the clock's been stopped from the 15th to the 18th of May, meaning you can extend the original deadline by 3 days, and you should provide a response on or before. It was previously the 14th of June, so it's now the 17th of June.
www.danielbarnett.co.uk.
I'm now going to take you through a couple of examples of how and when you might seek clarification. They're both lifted from the Information Commissioner's Office guidance. The first example is someone who used to be employed by a GP surgery. The second is an employee of a supermarket. So example one, this is a direct quote from the ICO guidance. Example one, an individual writes to their local GP practice and asks for all the information you hold about me. The practice employed the individual as a receptionist for a number of years, and they're currently registered as a patient. As the individual's now a carer for their elderly parent, the practice also holds personal data relating to them within their parents' file. The GP practice is of the view that they process a large volume of information about the individual, but it's not clear from the request what information they want. If the practice performs a reasonable search of their records, they'll be able to provide some of the information held about the individual, but would need to perform a much more extensive search to provide all the information they hold. In these circumstances, it's reasonable to ask the individual to clarify their request. The practice should explain to the individual that while they're entitled to request all the information held about them, the practice is only required to conduct a reasonable search of their records. This means that the individual might only receive some of the information held about them. It's important to explain to the individual that by clarifying their request, the practice will be able to focus their searches on locating the specific information that the individual wants. So the individual could clarify the request by, for example, asking for details of their employment from 1993 to 2008, their medical records which relate to an accident in 2018, and everything else you hold about me. The practice should then focus their searches on the first two inquiries and then perform a reasonable search for the rest of the information. That's example number one. Example number two involves a supermarket as an employer. Here it is. A supermarket receives a subject access request from a long-standing employee for all the data the supermarket holds about them. The employee has recently had a complaint made about them by another employee. The supermarket asks the employee if they only want information relating to the complaint or if the employee is looking for information between particular dates. The supermarket also asks if the employee would like information unrelated to their employment. For example, information linked to their reward account as a customer. Until the supermarket receives clarification, they're unable to perform a reasonable search or provide a copy of the information as they do not know what information the request relates to. Furthermore, they won't be able to provide some of the supplementary information, including the purposes of processing, categories of personal data, and the retention period. However, they can provide some information, including details of the individual's right to lodge a complaint with the Information Commissioner's Office. The supermarket sends the individual a copy of their privacy notice, as it already contains these details. Now, there's lots more small things covered in the guidance that I haven't touched on here, so it's definitely worth going and having a read, although you'd have to find data protection a lot more fascinating than I do on the Information Commissioner's Office website. The link is in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening to episode 70 of Employment Law Matters. Please do leave a review or subscribe on your favourite podcast player. You can go to www.danielbarnett.co.uk/podcast for information on how to subscribe. Thank you for listening. I'm Daniel Barnett from Outer Temple Chambers. Bye-bye.
Any information on this podcast is for general guidance only. Always seek legal advice. Please see full terms at www.danielbarnett.co.uk/podcast-terms.